CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, baby. All right, it is time for the Turkingtons. Now, Kate Turkington, a well-known broadcaster. In fact, I mean, she's got an incredible CV, which I didn't even get into. So I introduced her as, you know, Kate Turkington, as if everybody knows who she is. She's been in broadcasting. She's written many books. She is like a travel paragon. There are only a few countries in the world that Kate hasn't been to, and she's planning to go to them, even now at 89 years old. She's phenomenal. She's got stories for days. She's done things that most of us wish we could do. And I just love the fact that there's this person who makes 89 cooler than some 25-year-olds make 25. She really is. I mean, Ryan, you'd never met her before.
No.
Like Avanti, you saw her as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely, you know, got experience and wisdom on her side.
Yeah, for sure.
But the nice thing about her is she's just so positive and optimistic. And here it is, a discussion. It's not the first time I've had Kate in the studio, but it's the first time I've had her in the studio with her daughters. And both of them, they've done extremely well too. Both, you know, smart people who really have done lots of different things, teaching, starting their own businesses. They run a company called Flow Communications, which does all kinds of marketing, PR, you know, helping to message for companies, NGOs. They won a ton of awards just the other night.
Oh, they cleaned up.
And they really did. And so to have all three of them in the studio is very, very special. Take a listen to this. I'm sure you're going to love it. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for a live show. And don't go away. There's plenty of other good stuff happening this Wednesday morning right here on CliffCentral.com. Well, I attended an extraordinary 89th birthday with a woman who is, she's well known to everyone in South Africa and probably everyone in the world because she's traveled to every corner of the globe. She's also somebody, I was originally her producer, poor Kate. I was her producer for a little bit. But I'm thrilled to say that we're still friends after all these years, 24 years, and I've been lucky enough to gather some wisdom from her along the way. But the interview wouldn't be an interview like all the normal ones because Kate's already fascinating enough on her own. But we've decided to bring in her two extraordinary daughters too, both of whom are accomplished and celebrated women in their own right. And I don't think I'm going to get much more time in this discussion than this introduction, because once these three start, I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. And I'll probably just have to take a nap in between while they all start telling all the good stories. That's what I hope is going to happen.
You'll never take a nap while the Turkingtons are here.
Well, Kate Turkington, happy birthday for earlier this month. And Tara and Tiffany, it's very good to have you both here.
Thank you
for coming in. And congratulations to you two on Flow Communications and all the awards that you got the other day at the Gen Next Awards.
New Gen.
I can't remember which one's which, but anyway.
Thank you.
There we go, New Gen. But you walked away with armfuls of these trophies for you and all your clients. So well done on that front.
Thank you, Gareth.
So let's just start here because I know that for your business, a big focus has been women. And the matriarch of your family is this extraordinary woman. And I'm pretty sure that you've got stories that will paint her in the most perfect light. But you've probably...
But you've probably got some
other stories, and those are the ones that I might be more interested in, that will show that she actually is just another human being and a mum, and that she's as fallible as all... She's not like the Pope. Popes are infallible, as we learnt, and believe it or not, many years ago. But this focus on women and your agency is a great example of that. It must come from a place where your mother instilled something in you both at a young age. Yes or no?
Instilled completely that women can be anything they want to be and actually need to be more, and has driven us to create a company where we hire over 75% women. We strongly believe that...
Do you have a few men too? A bit of affirmative action for men.
Token men.
Women are powerful, but I don't know how controversial I'm allowed to be on the show, because you asked for a story about women.
Yes.
And yesterday, my mother sat me down in her courtyard and said, "Do you know that I had 3 orgasms in my sleep last night?"
Oh my God!
And we're off.
I just looked up at the pot plant.
Well, that's
and said, "Well, I've never had one if I sleep."
Kate,
I'm blushing.
I'm amazed that we got you to blush within the first 5 minutes of the. Congratulations, Tiffany. Well done. You have delivered. If you say nothing else during the course of this interview, I'll be thrilled. But that was amazing. So. Kate, you often say that you come from a long line of witches. Was part of your magic learning how to do this?
It just comes naturally.
Oh, wow. Tara, was it always easy having a mother who's such a character and such a...
No, it was never easy.
Straight to that answer. It didn't take you a second.
This is a bit of a tamer story, slightly tamer. When I was in I was about 16 in high school, very impressionable and very embarrassed to have my mother. When we went shopping on a Saturday morning, as you did then, I made her walk on the other side of the Sandton City. But anyway, one day she got, there was an article that Style magazine was going to do. And and they said, please take a picture. They gave a few people a little... camera with, and you would print out a little Polaroid. It's not like the funky ones of today. It was the old school ones. Please take a self portrait of how you see yourself. Okay, so my mother did this. Okay, she dressed in a corset, a red satin corset, with a pith helmet and her reading glasses, and she stood on my father.
And fishnet stockings.
And I think she had a riding whip. And so Style magazine got this, and they blew it up into a double-page spread. And then I had to go to school.
Where it was posted, up on the pinboard.
My foot was not on your father, and there wasn't a riding prop.
That's
your father took the photograph. He was encouraging me.
Well, your father is also, he was a remarkable man. And I was very lucky to have spent some time with him, because whenever your mom would do her show, he would dutifully come in and he would be there and he'd listen to the show. There were one or two occasions where you did shout at us because we weren't listening to the show.
Yes.
We were talking to each other. But I will forever remember, as the happiest wake I've ever been to in my life,
yes,
your dad's wake was just such a beautiful occasion. You know, Kate and I had spoken about religion and what comes after this, and for the
meaning of life.
Absolutely. And you'd introduced me to rabbis and cardinals and prophets and
charlatans.
But angels. Here I saw for the first time that you practice what you preach. You had this amazing family get together. Whoever wanted to say something said something, and it was all lovely. Lovely, funny stories, genuine happiness all around. And I thought, wow, that's actually the way to go.
But you know what, Kath, it's almost a set invitation to an Irish wake, because he was Irish. The invitation nearly always says, bring something to eat, something to drink, and something to say.
Uh-huh.
And Alan and I once went to a wake in Sligo on the west coast of Ireland. There was the bodies stretched out on chairs, and it lasted for 3 days. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
Was it easy to raise these two, because they're also quite strong characters?
They, at one stage when they were sharing a room, Tara is untidy. There's another word for it. She's creative, as they say in South Africa, creative, and everything's everywhere. And Tiffany's more like me. She's quite tidy and organized.
Yes,
and I think it was you who tied the piece of string.
Me?
Tiffany tied a piece of string round down the middle of the bedroom so that Tara wouldn't go into half of the, and I was given some wonderful, people, you're either tidy or you're not, and neither worry, tidy people worry, untidy people don't. And Tara does it was quite untidy, and somebody gave me the most wonderful advice. They said, pick up all the rubbish from the floor and just dump it on her bed. That'll fix it. Came home, went to bed, didn't even notice it.
You've also managed to travel together, and travel's such a big part of what you've done. And you've written books about the amazing places you've been to. You've written articles, and you've shown so many other people who've lived vicariously through you and your travels, parts of the world that the rest of us would never see.
Of course you will.
Well, I mean, you just planned a trip for us to Uzbekistan.
Yes, Uzbekistan.
In the front entrance hall here. So you must have been to some amazing places with your mum. And what kinds of things did you see there? And what sort of things did you glean off of her behavior in these places?
She taught us from a very, very early age that if you have any money in the world, you got to travel, which is why she doesn't have any money in the world. But whenever she got a paycheck, whenever she got royalties from a book, whenever she got any money whatsoever, she planned a family trip. And she took us traveling all over Europe, all over America. Back then it was the early traveling days, so it wasn't the later, more exotic ones. But she instilled in us a love of travel then, and I hope we can do that with our families, that it's pointless to die with money in the bank, everyone would love some, but really use it on experiences and use it on memories. And I think she has 9 grandchildren. I think all of them are instilled the absolute, it's not love of traveling, it's a need to travel.
Listen, this thing about the grandchildren, there was quite a jostling for position.
Very competitive.
On very Saturday at your party, my God, they were all ready to climb into each other about who's the favorite. And the one was saying she had a ring and that proves that she's the favorite. And then someone else was shouting from the background. I think it was Rex going, no, I'm the favorite. Everybody knows I'm the favorite. So there's obviously a lot of competition on here. They all love you, right? They all love you. Not one that thinks you're a...
Do you know, they wrote me. They all did special things. Tara's 4 all wrote me a special letter. Tara is Rex.
Tiffany.
Oh, sorry.
She never calls us by the right name.
Names, right?
I did that the other night.
Tiffany's too did the music and sent me lovely WhatsApps. My oldest grandson complained he'd phoned me 8 times and I hadn't returned his call. I said, rubbish. They're all so-so. And of course, they're all number one. They're not really, but.
Well, we'll never find out who the favourite was.
But this is interesting, Gareth. 5 boys and 4 girls. Only, you know, I'm still, after 14, 15 years, president of Centum BirdLife. The 5 boys are all birders, but none of the girls, really. A bit, sort of, but not like the boys. The boys are brilliant. Brilliant birds.
You're still the president of Saturn BirdLife.
Yes,
we were at Maury Vale with 2 of the grandsons on Thursday. I don't have a number. I'm anonymous.
No. But what I mean is, how many of the birds? You know, they've got the.
Do you know? I don't know.
The people and who have the 800 of
no,
you know, this
and
rarefied.
Gareth,
you know what I'm talking about?
Right?
My
mum's very good, very very good at birding.
Exactly. People say to me, "How many countries have you been to?" I have no idea. I've never counted. Why count? What's the point?
There was an interesting question that came up while I was at your party. Someone said that they were asked a very bizarre question once about travel, and probably. You know, you're the one who can answer this best. Is there a place that you'd been to that you'll never, ever want to go back to again?
Yes, Burkina Faso.
Oh, really? Burkina Faso. Not good, huh?
I went.
Were you there as a journalist or for fun?
It was a private trip with a small group of friends, 3 friends. And every year, this was the wonderful part, every 2 years they have something called Festima, and that's the festival of the masks. Now, a lot of people think masks are something, you know, to decorate the living room wall with or put on, but in West Africa particularly, I can't speak for elsewhere, when an elder dons a mask, they take on the spirit of the ancestors and they become very, very fearsome and people are terrified of them. So this festival was many, many countries from West Africa, putting on the mask. I mean, they would come in blowing smoke. One of them cooked a chicken under their grass skirts. They do. And the crowd, it was in a big dusty arena, and every time the mask went near the crowd, they shrunk back in absolute terror. But I had met the night before in a bar, which had no water, no beer, no nothing, three Nigerians, and synchronicity, I had taught the father of one of the Nigerians when I taught in Nigeria at quite a famous grammar school. And they came on the last evening, and they were all done in white paint and white headdresses and blowing great animal horns. And they walked right round the arena, and they came and knelt in front of me and said, "This is for Mother." That was the good part of Burkina Faso.
I was going to say, why not go back for that? You're treated like a goddess.
I also sat on the back of a sacred crocodile, which was quite special, drugged to its eyeballs. Huge, 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 8 foot, three-meter crocodile. They drugged them. They asked me to sit on its back, so I did. But, you know, the French were the colonists there, and the French left nothing. They left no schools, but they left a French of sense of style. So croissant and clothes you could have made there. Otherwise, it was a desert. And now, of course, it's war there.
I believe you've also been proposed to a number of times, and you've rejected all of these proposals since, Alan.
Maybe you should tell the story, Tiffany.
Tiffany, do you want to tell us what happened? Or do you, Tara?
I just wanted to go back to the travel. We can get to the proposals.
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to ask Tiffany about going to Everest with my mum.
Oh, yes, of course. You went
to Everest Base Camp.
Yeah. Everest Base Camp in Tibet. So I think that side's now closed. You can only go via Nepal, which we call the light side because it's about 2,000 meters lower.
Same height as Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
Gosh,
Tibet is very arid. And
while on Tibet, you interviewed the Dalai Lama, didn't you, Kate?
Yes. He's not allowed in Tibet.
Who's not allowed in Tibet, absolutely.
And the Chinese have taken over, and it's a very sad state of affairs. But when we got to, I wouldn't call it a hotel because it was more of an outbuilding without glass in the windows and wet mattresses and no toilets.
It was a simple Tibetan.
But you had your Irish whiskey, didn't you?
We had our Irish whiskey, but there was a tour group there from Australia. I think it was just the two of us, and that the leader of the tour group had been there over 15 times, and it was the first time she said they'd ever seen Everest with a full moon clear at night. And we arrived, and this giant big moon rose above, exactly above the peak, and it was crystal clear. It was very cold, but it was crystal clear, and it was goosebumps even
how spectacular.
Now thinking of it. Yes.
Well,
it was a fantastic trip.
Supermoon at your birthday on Saturday.
In their Woolworth techies. No training. No.
And
no,
people.
No oxygen.
And people
nothing.
Go for months, and they run up hills.
And people die. We had a few almost deaths.
We had
that trip.
A few.
We didn't realize how hectic it was.
We did some white water rafting, which makes where we've just come back from Taranine last week, makes Vic Falls white water rafting look like a duck pond. So Tiffany and I and somebody at the bottom of a 100-foot gorge, we go white water rafting. I'll tell you the story very quickly. So we're in one dinghy in the front, about eight of us.
No training.
And as it happened, we had two of our party were doctors. Okay, importance of the story. Behind us was a dinghy which had the Manchester Social Club. They were having an outing and they'd come to Everest. And they were in the dinghy behind us, quite a long way behind us. Anyway, one of them fell out and somebody in our dinghy.
Glacial water, minus
I mean,
zero.
Somebody in our dinghy noticed.
Heart attack stuff.
And the people in our dinghy, we managed to drag her onto our dinghy. She was bright blue. My friend Marjorie, you met at my party, was a retired anaesthetist, and the other doctor. They were asking anybody got a pen because they wanted to do a tracheotomy.
In the boat, going down the rapids.
In the rapids. in the boat, and all this was happening. Anyway, very long story short, one of the doctors, they fixed her, and one of the doctors, Mark, climbed out of the 100-foot gorge with her all day. We eventually got back to the bank. They all thought we were dead. But that night, the lady we'd rescued, she was a big biker and she had tattoos all over her. And she'd made a remarkable recovery. And she comes up to Mark, the doctor, and says, "I think I owe you a beer." And he's a very mild man. He said, "I nearly hit her." He said, "And oh, I must just show you while I think of it."
Ah. That, what's that?
It's a tattoo that says "Established 1934."
So two quick things that come out of this. So first of all, I mean, I often, when I hear these stories, I'm sure you will agree too, Tara and Tiffany, you hear these stories about your mum's generation and you think, well, we have such ordinary lives by comparison. I mean, she survived the Blitz, for God's sake.
Yes.
You rescued this woman on your dinghy on the 100-foot gorge. You were an evacuee. You really have traveled everywhere. You've tried everything. I jokingly said at your party that you were one of the first people to do ayahuasca long before it was trendy
she
to
made
do.
Me too.
Yeah, and as I said, most parents worry about their children doing drugs, but in our case, the children worry about
the
parents.
It was only the once people.
No, it wasn't. There was another time in Lesotho where you and Tiffany went back and did it. Maybe you weren't. Okay, sorry, Tiffany. You and Dad went.
I was cured of drugs at a very young age.
You went to Lesotho and you did it again. You came back at the end of the weekend after our house at your house. And you looked like you'd been dragged through a bush backwards. It was
It was just trying.
She also worked inside a whale.
What?
Oh, yes.
How?
Nobody ever believes this. Go back a long, long time. No television. People had never
heard
of
London. Were you one of the last people
London.
To gather ambergris?
London. Yes, yes.
Really?
London. 1950s. In the 50s, no television or hardly any. Nobody had heard of David Attenborough. These two young Norwegian entrepreneurs found a blue whale washed up on a beach in Norway. Brilliant. They got it, they gutted it, they put refrigerators inside, and they toured it round the capitals of Europe. And it came to London on the South Bank. It was 60 feet long. I watched that in metres.
Considerable.
And he employed 10 students. And the public queued up, cost half a crown in those. Public queued up to see a whale. They'd never seen a whale. It was a bit high, I must tell you.
I'm sure.
And we used to walk them up and down. One of the students, Rudolph, who was at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, he used to tell them this had died of love. We all used to spin. But every night we used to go into the jaws of the whale and have cold beers because it was so hot that summer in London. And all the whalebone was hanging at the back of the mouth. And, of course, none of us had cameras or phones or anything.
No.
And we used to sit in the jaws of the whale every night and have cold beers.
What a job.
It went off finally to France, to Paris, where it got a bit too high. They made millions.
How clever. And a blue whale, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, those don't come around every day and wash up on a beach.
The Elon Musk of their day.
Quite right. Sure.
But you say that we don't have interesting lives, but Gareth, it's so much about attitude. You know, you can live a day in Parkwood with my mother where you think it's a boring life, but she'll find something fascinating about it. And positive about it.
Well, that's always been true about you. And I think it's one of the many reasons that so many people love you and love your books and loved your radio shows and continue to take a huge interest in everything that you do. You're very positive. It's not difficult for you.
No. Tara's the same. You're all
thanks.
She's a misery, but Tara's great.
I'm the reasonable, practical one.
We're all the same. And I wonder, you know, as you know, Gareth, from working with you all those years ago, I don't believe in past lives or future lives. I have always lived in the present. I don't know whether it goes back to being evacuated from my parents at 4 and having to live in the present, you know, sister and I had a brown paper parcel tied to us, put on a train sent out of London to strangers. My parents rescued us after 6 months. But I have never lived in the past and I don't live in the future. I live in the moment. And I think that's quite a gift. I see it as a gift because I'm not worrying.
I spoke to a psychologist a while ago who said, he's a regular on our show, and he said, to be happy, you must live in the present. So it's precisely what you're saying. Too much time in the past, depression. Too much time in the future, anxiety.
Exactly. Right?
But also my mum has been a great role model in practicing gratitude. I mean, I know now like Oprah's made it all like a thing, but actually my mum has always been about gratitude. And mum, tell us what you say at night.
Last thing I'll say at night, always, I pat myself on the shoulder and say, well done, body.
That's why you're still doing the things you're doing. You celebrated this birthday on the Zambezi.
Tara, I think tell the story. We were on a private island in the middle of the Zambezi.
I had a beautiful lodge called Royal Chindu, which is just the most beautiful lodge I think I've ever been to.
Me too.
And we woke up in the morning and, you know, obviously Kate had left several clues that it would be her birthday that day.
What, in case you'd forgotten? Really?
And we're just a family of four and an American friend.
The staff brought her a cake before breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And then we went on a boat ride and we saw her birthday otter. We saw a Cape Crawler's otter playing in the water, swimming, getting out the water, rolling in the sand.
Oh, wow.
And, and then we saw later that day, she's also given to us a great love of nature and wildlife. We saw, I don't know if you know what an African skimmer is, but it's a bird with a big, long orange beak, dark orange beak, and it skims along the surface and catches little fish as it goes.
And there's only 1,000 left in the world.
They're highly, highly critically endangered. And so they're black and white with this long orange beak, but when they're babies, they're just little balls of fluff, like cotton wool fluff. And we had been and seen a sandbank where they were nesting. We'd seen it like 2 days in a row. And on the third day, we noticed that there were two little babies.
They'd hatched.
And then my mum was, oh, they just hatched overnight. Well, being the bird expert that she is. Then I looked back at my photos that I took the two previous days.
They were there the whole
babies
time.
They were there all the time. We haven't seen
them. Now there are 1,002 African skimmers left in the
world.
There we are. And apparently what happens to the babies, crocodiles lie on them. So these huge crocodiles are crawling up onto the sandbank and splat. They go critically endangered.
But anyway, it was the most beautiful setting, a beautiful day.
And just to tell Gareth about the village, the lodge has a village next door that's not a tourist village. You've all been. We've all been to these Masai Mara and these Serengeti.
No curio shop
tourist, a proper village. They take guests to... one of the guests bought the Edith, who's the unlikely leader of the village. This was my third time there. She greeted me like a long-lost friend. One of the guests had bought a water tank for the village because the kids get taken by crocodiles. They go down to the river to fill there. And then round their vegetable gardens, they supply all the veggies to the lodge. Aubergines, peppers, the most exotic things. They've been given the seeds. They work their butts off to keep this going. Fresh bream from the river. But Edith had them all build. What's the poisonous plant? Black rhinos and civets are the only things that
think
eat
of it.
Can't think of it. Anyway, they've built these huge hedges around the veggie gardens, and the elephants come in once a month or so.
And take whatever they
and
want.
Edith says, it's the good Lord protects my vegetable. I said, I've remembered, it's the euphorbia. The elephants are very clever. They know not to eat euphorbia. But such a wonderful, wonderful story.
I haven't forgotten about the proposal story.
Oh, yeah. Tiffany's going to tell it.
I am going to tell it. But I'm going to tell it from my perspective because my mother went off to Italy to stay in a very good friends.
But before that, Villa. She went on a painting course in France. That's where it began.
That's where she met him.
Yeah.
Then she got invited to the Villa.
She can do everything well, include paint well.
In Italy, and we all said, oh, Mum, we think this is, you know, a bit of a date, a bit of a prospect. Oh, rubbish, she's just a good friend. So off they went to Italy to have a few days together in some beautiful villa that he owned.
Sounds good.
It's a diamond miner and had mansions in every continent in the world. So we were quite encouraging.
He was nice.
John was
he
lovely.
Was very nice.
My mother phones me one afternoon. She says, I don't know what the matter is. You know, we went for a lovely lunch. We had a lovely lunch in the village. And John became all grumpy, and now he's sitting there, and I had to leave him at the restaurant, and he's sitting there drinking wine on his own, and I'm here. I said, well, what happened? She said, well, you know, he said to me, Kate, what about it? Do you think we should get married? And she said, never, not over my dead body. And she walked up and got off. And then she was all surprised that this poor man was drinking away his sorrows in the
But then I've got to tell you a corollary to the story, because it's the best April Fool's joke I've ever played. Before this just happened, comes April Fool's morning, I send all the family a WhatsApp. After a lot of agonizing, I have decided to marry John. I will spend 6 months in South Africa, 6 months in Europe. Sorry. Tara was driving, nearly crashed her car.
I said, well done, that's such excellent news.
Tiffany, my eldest daughter, who flies under the radar a lot, just said, April Fool.
She got it straight away. Wow. Well, you could have been, you know.
He was boring. He was really nice.
He was good looking. He was really interesting. He was really
He wasn't
nice.
Really. He was
he
cultured.
He was well-travelled, well-read.
He just wasn't an
Funny.
Irishman.
No, anyway.
She has high standards.
Anyway.
And she doesn't need anybody because she can have her own orgasms.
Exactly. I knew you were going to bring that out. I knew you were going to bring that out.
You should never have told that.
You should tell me quite a bit.
I haven't told my friends that. Except I told one and she said, yeah.
So who haven't you met that you really wanted to?
Nobody really. I mean, I'm going to go into old fart mode for a moment. I was thinking of politicians. When I grew up a million moons ago, remember in 11 years, I'll be a century, even though they've had the tall poppy syndromes worked, we had people like Churchill and Roosevelt and De Gaulle. We had world leaders of stature that we could look up to. And we had other leaders in other fields. Who is there now? Anywhere in the world, Angela Merkel was almost there. Now she's gone. There's nobody, Gareth. There's nobody. There's no world figure I could look up to and think, really, well, I'm sure there is. I'm sure I've probably forgotten somebody.
I think maybe that's something that not just old people feel. Mm. I think a lot of us feel that really there aren't that many truly great people.
Yeah.
Because maybe it just comes with what era you're born in and the amount of adventure you can squeeze into a lifetime. But, I mean, you mentioned some of these people. Churchill was fighting here in South Africa. Then he was in India. Then he was in Parliament. Then he was writing these incredible speeches. And, I mean, he's
and winning the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Absolutely. And it was prolific. Yeah. Wrote lots and lots of books. You've written a number of books.
Yeah, quite a few.
Is that something you enjoyed or is it something that you...
No, I enjoyed. I did enjoy. And I'm being nagged all the time to do another one, but not ready yet. The Dalai Lama I enjoyed meeting because he was the very first person who said to me, and it's always there, and we all know it now, and this is going back at least 30 years, never forget the togetherness of all things.
Hmm.
Now we know plants talk to one another. There are tree systems with fungal sending messages. Oh, yeah. We know so much more, but that is so true. You take away one spider and what happens. But I did, some magazine once asked me, who would I like to have had dinner with? And obviously, I had two selections, Shakespeare and Shane Warne.
Oh, wow. That couldn't be more disparate than that.
Oh, I loved Shane Warne. And I used to live in Rankisfontein. And you know, the first cricket match of every touring team, Nicky Oppenheim has a cricket pitch there. So the touring team used to come in and we used to take the grandchildren and sit in our deck chairs and watch all the great cricketers.
Why Shane Warne?
Because sexy and naughty and himself, not pretending to be anybody
else. Did he go out after
a superb cricketer?
He went out after an orgy of cocaine and hookers, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend who died in a whorehouse in Bangkok. He was very, you remember Richard, we won't say his name, lovely, lovely guy. He thought it was such a good idea of opening, I don't want to use the term brothel, but club
For
older men
in
Bangkok. And he made millions out of it. You know, somebody who just wanted a girl to come and sit on their lap or something. Elon Musk out of the thinking out of the box again.
That's entrepreneurship. You that's what that
he
is.
It was lovely. Oh. Cut down the tree in our front garden in Kelvin. Told me it was dead and it wasn't. It was sleeping.
if it's not people that you would have liked to have met, then are there really unpleasant people that you did meet, but that you're glad you met too because they were interesting, even if they were unpleasant?
Might be my producer at the time. There was a guy called Fred Phelps, for once I've remembered a name, and he ran a cult and something in America, and he would go to the funerals of veterans, I think it was during the Iraq War, and shout, they're gay, they shouldn't be having a funeral.
Yes, I remember
and
him.
And he put a curse on. He put a curse on me. He put the Turkington curse on
mine. And then in the same week, the transmitter of 702 blew up in flames. In the same week that the curse was put on her. True story.
But
it was off air for the longest. Look, you can Google it.
So it was your fault.
Not long afterwards, I interviewed Jesus Christ. And he came, and obviously from South California, in a silk suit and gold chains and all his henchmen. And obviously, I must have been quite nice to him, because the next day I got an email saying he'd made me an honorary angel.
Oh, wow.
So I went from
in
a curse.
Advance.
And so in a few weeks, I went in advance. So I went from being cursed to being an honorary angel.
But then remember, didn't he say that you can see where angels have been because there's a little white feather? Oh. So then my mum went out to hang the washing on the line. There was a white feather on a dog poo. So I don't know what that...
So there's a bit of mixed messaging.
I can remember shouting at the dog, "My God, you've killed the Holy Ghost."
Out of all those charlatans and the religious leaders and all kinds of woo-woo people, that was your favourite term for them, woo-woo people.
Yes. Still, it's become quite current now.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these people, you were the first one to give these people airtime some of the time. They've never been heard of before. Rat worshippers and all kinds of things. There were cults, all kinds of cults.
Faith healers.
Oh, yeah.
People who foretold the future. And we had one famous psychic in, and I can't remember if it was you, it may well have been. I said, "She's going to say there's somebody behind you, and it's a woman, and her eyes are dancing, and I think it's your mother." She did exactly.
So you predicted what the psychic was going to predict.
She did.
What she says to everyone.
Well, yes, we predicted what the psychic.
All right, but your mother, I mean, I've heard stories about your mother, and I mentioned that I found your book the other day about her, Doris.
Yeah.
So just tell us about her, because I know you two have probably heard all the good stories, and you could probably add to these. But she sounds like she was remarkable.
She was a remarkable woman. She left school. She was the daughter of a Swedish sea captain who'd sailed with Conrad. He was just a deckhand.
Joseph Conrad?
Yes, yes.
Heart of
Darkness. He spoke Russian. He spoke Polish. It's a long story. I have his obituary, though, from the London docks or whatever it is. He fell. It was wooden ships. He used to say, Kate, the ships were made of wood and the men were made of iron. Now the ships are made of iron and the men are made of wood. He fell from the mast, couldn't have been very good at his job, in Canada. And the nearest, or whatever reason, the nearest port, the only port they were putting into, was Rio de Janeiro from. And he taught himself English while he was laid up with a broken leg. And the obituary doesn't say this, and I can't find the reason. For some reason, he was invalided to the Royal Naval Hospital in Greenwich,
okay,
which is where he met my grandmother, the witch, the Yorkshire witch, who was a nurse.
Was she a real witch?
Yeah, she was. So my mother grew up, so my grandfather became a docker and eventually rose up and became quite high in the system. So she was brought up on Canary Wharf.
It's all commercial buildings now.
It was
the Isle of Dogs in those. So she remembers the tea clippers coming in and there were parrots in the house and monkeys. But then there was a war on. She always wanted to travel. The end of the war, which war mum, 1945, never travelled. My father also been a miner. He'd been in the Jarrow Miners' March.
Oh, yeah.
But even though they'd had no formal education, there was Shakespeare, Dickens in the house, God knows what. Anyway, come the end of the war, my mother bought 5 pairs of nylons and 5 tins of Nescafe. And she said to my father and sister, I'm going to France. And she took herself off. She'd never travelled.
Mother-like daughter.
To Paris. Uh-huh. To Paris. Huh. Where she found pension and made friends, and after she was only in a stay 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, it was August. The pension, being in Paris, they all wanted to go to the coast. So they said, will you look after the... She didn't speak a word of friends. Will you look after the pension for us? So she stayed a month and came back. And that was like... And my father said, yeah, fine, you know, kind of thing.
And you say history repeats itself because she's done this to you even when you were little.
They've also done it to
But, you know, for anyone listening to this, it sounds like my mother lives such a glamorous life.
No.
Of travel and luxury and book writing. But she's grafted flipping hard in her life, you know.
You two got it from somewhere.
Yeah, we have. And she's taught us that hard work is actually the start of everything.
But don't be a buzzkill. We were enjoying these stories. You have to get all serious now, Tiffany.
Sounds so lovely. And it is hard work. And you've got to work hard and be able to have this.
And she forgot you at school a couple of times.
Many times. Like 16 years.
Yeah, but whenever you're a pioneer in something, it's actually much more difficult. I mean, you know, Gareth. I mean, it's much more difficult than people think. You're starting something for the first time or, I mean... Kate was started the TV department at Wits and,
as a woman.
Even today that would be quite a big deal. But I mean, you just did that, and she showed us, how it's done. Just do something. Don't wait. Opportunity, you know, never knocks. You must just go and
bash down the door
of opportunity. Invite it in. Tell it what you want from it because. Otherwise, you know, your life might end up being a bit boring.
Make opportunities and take opportunities. I think that's the thing. Don't wait and sit for something to come along at all. I think looking back, I might, thank goodness I didn't. I could have become a diplomat.
I doubt it, ma'am. Really,
you know, when I left university.
You would have got fired, ma'am.
And I nearly went to Iceland to do a PhD in old Icelandic. That's another long story. But I've tried my hands at most things. I can't play the piano and I hate cooking. But otherwise... But look at you and Tiffany starting a company with nothing, no money, and now do the proud mum thing, becoming one of the biggest communications companies in South Africa. I'm very proud of you, girls.
And she still works, mum. You know, she does media training with us. We do media training.
I write and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so she still works.
Do you have a problem with getting old?
I don't. Getting old sucks, basically,
right.
With aches and pains and whatever. But the advantages are you do become very wise. Gareth.
You're very.
I sometimes have to keep my mouth very shut.
When is that, Mama? I've never known you to keep your mouth shut ever.
Daughters or granddaughters or whatever. I sometimes see things and hear things of other people, and I think, button your lip.
That's just not true, Mum.
Don't say anything. But I read recently, I think I read online every morning, New York Times, Daily Telegraph, because they have the best sports reporters and good arts people, News 24, who still make spelling mistakes, which is why
many
I
mistakes.
Won't pay the paywall, and BBC. And then we all do word puzzles, and we're very competitive. So we all WhatsApp with one another. I got Wordle in 2, I got Birdle in 4, I got Connections in 3. We have a whole first early morning system of who's
it's
got
like a
what.
Grand Prix. but you don't, because, I mean, a lot of people say this. I said it to you the other day. You're inspiring because you're not. I don't really think of how old you are. You've kind of been the same to me for 24
well,
years.
Well, I don't feel. I am wiser. I definitely am wiser. I think the thing about being young, I had no self knowledge whatsoever. I had absolutely no self knowledge. Now I do have a lot of self knowledge. I know what I'm doing most of the time. But I think I told you that night at my party, I've only got one thing left on my bucket list, and that's to give somebody Heimlich's manoeuvre.
Yes.
So if any of
so
you
someone has to choke
start
around
choking,
you.
No. I really would. And then I read that Heimlich only gave that manoeuvre when he was 80 years old. He invented it, but had never tried it himself. And he was in a restaurant when he was 80 and something. She's hope for me. And somebody choked to death and he gave them Heimlich's manoeuvre.
That's the only thing you want. So for you, Tiffany and Tara, like what's the thing that really you love when your people, everybody knows your mom, and when they meet her and you're around, what kinds of things do you see people saying all the time that you know either to be absolutely true and that you also marvel at, even when you're not being cynical about her, which we all are about our moms. And has she become at all irritating in her old age? No, well, I mean, I'll hold back a little. I mean,
the other day we were giving a pitch to a client and someone in the audience rushed up to the team at Flow and said, do you know that everyone loves Kate? There's not a single person who doesn't love Kate.
No. Let me retell the story slightly. So this is a big pitch, a big corporate client. It's very formal. They're all sitting there in their little desks. You know, you're not allowed to smile or anything. And then it's question time at the end. And the first question they ask, are you related to Kate Turkington? Not, what are you going to do for us? Can we talk about the finer points of your financial proposal? But are you related to Kate Turkington? I say, yes. Yeah, she's my mum. And then I saw him and another guy beaming in the audience. And then he came up to me afterwards and he said, oh, I've worked with Kate at 702. I said, oh, goodness, I hope you liked her. He said, there's not a person in South Africa who doesn't love your mom.
That's true.
Aww. So that's nice.
Yeah. That is true.
That's nice.
Yeah, you know, you often hear about these people who are the children of celebrities or, you know, they've and your mother is a celebrity,
whether you like it or not. Her name more often than we get called our names.
Yeah, it can have its pluses and its minuses. I mean, you kind of have a little bit of reputation just by virtue of the fact that she is your mom.
Which can be good or bad.
Well, mostly good, as you've already indicated. But it's also, there's always this pressure on people who've got remarkable parents, because then if you aren't fantastic, people go, oh, well, bit of a dud in the next generation. you worry about that. I used to think, because I'm proud of both of my parents and they're also, you know, terrific people. But on this woman's scale, I mean,
first of all, she always just let us be who we were. So I never felt pressured to be anything like her. I never felt that pressure. But back to your question about what people say or, you know, my mum is just the most fun person, especially to travel with. And she's totally unstoppable. So I remember once we were in Russia, which, I mean, now we couldn't go. I mean, who's going to go to Russia anymore? Right. We were in Russia, and we were in St. Petersburg, which is a beautiful city. They call it the Venice of the North because it's got canals. Hundreds of canals. Yeah. And at midnight, all these canals, they've got drawbridges, and the drawbridges open to let the ships go in, like once in and out, once a day at midnight. Okay, so now we have been touring, we've walked flipping St. Petersburg flat, we've been to castles, and we're absolutely exhausted. And there's a night off on the program, one night off. Oh, my mum says, let's go. We must sail in St. Petersburg. We must go.
It's the white night.
There's a white night, so it doesn't get dark. We must go on a trip and on the river. So, fine, I found, this is now an extra thing, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's exhausted.
Yeah.
I found a thing at 7 p.m. where we could go and sail up and down the rivers. No, she says, absolutely not. We have to go at midnight because that's when all the bridges open. And so we very begrudgingly went at midnight, got home at 4 in the morning, started going the next morning at 6, but it was one of my happiest travel memories, seeing all those beautiful bridges open at midnight.
And the Russians, we danced with them.
We drank vodka. Tourists. We danced on the boat and saw all the drawbridges open.
She was also in the crew a couple of months ago where she went out looking for aardvark at midnight in the freezing cold in midwinter.
In July, I was in a tent. In the crew this July.
Must have been freezing.
It was a 5-star tent, but it was the zipping.
Yes.
It was the zipping of the tents, and when you're going to the loo, unzipping. But we got our aardvark, so.
But at the end of the day, she's not a celebrity. She's our mom. We all have our mom. She's our mom. And yes, she irritates us.
I have,
she supports,
honestly,
and encourages, and.
I have honestly never felt I was a celebrity. Honestly, I say that. Honestly, I'm always surprised. And both the girls know I really have a superb memory, but I have no memory for names. I mean, I came here and greeted somebody and said, so long since
never
I've seen you.
Never in her whole life ever called us by the right name.
I have
either.
No idea who it is. And my whole family know that if
Sorry,
people
Jen.
Come up to me and say, you know, oh, how are you? I'm wonderful. And how are the girls? How are the dogs? And everything. I don't introduce them. They know I haven't got a clue who I'm speaking to.
Well, that's a minor, minor flaw in an otherwise pretty good CV. Okay, so.
Can I just tell you one story about sort of being famous?
Of course you
can. I've been
can.
Lucky enough to go to Antarctica a couple of times. And the first time I went, I went with Alan. Because of the Antarctic Treaty, you can only have, I think they've raised it to 500 now, but you can only have 400 people on a ship. And you go in these rubber ducks, these dinghies, and your red jackets and your boots, and you sit and wait to get in your dinghy. And I went ashore with the people in my dinghy, 8 of us, and there was a colony of nesting terns, a bird I mm-hmm. knew. So I walked away a little from the group to admire these terns, and a figure in a yellow jacket, which meant he was one of the lecturers, very important, a figure popped over an iceberg and said to me, you're Tara Turkington's mother.
There we go. In Antarctica, of all places, huh?
But she can't remember who it was. So.
I have no idea who it was.
So you went to Antarctica a few times?
Twice.
Wow.
Wonderful. Absolutely amazing. But we went, one of my most loved trips was out to Patagonia, Tiffany.
And Galapagos Islands.
And Galapagos
Islands.
And the Amazon.
Was hard
stopping. And again, Turkington Luck, Tiffany and I are in the, sounds so exotic, in the Amazon. And again, I think there are only a handful of giant otters left in the world. And we're paddling along some creek in the.
We said, please find us a giant otter. They said we only see those once a year. And those are the guards. So you
anyway, we're paddling along. How many? 4 of us in a canoe or whatever. And suddenly this giant head pops up in front of us. And being all South Africans, we were all so, you know, we didn't scream and reach for a camera. We just sat quiet. And these three giant otters popped their heads up, swam around us, and then ran up the bank.
Is it true in the Amazon that the insects just eat you?
Yes.
Really?
Very much unpleasant. Worse is the okavango.
Oh, really?
Much worse. When you go on a speedboat, that's a bit of a misnomer. When you go on a boat with a motor in the okavango, not now because it's very dry, but in season, they give you something like a beekeeper's helmet.
Oh.
Because otherwise you're riding along and there's just swarms of insects practically knocking you. But I have walked into lions and I've shushed all kinds of critters off, but elephants are my best. I think it's the matriarch.
Are they your favourite?
I think it's a matriarch thing.
And they do seem to know things we don't know.
Absolutely. And once I was with a friend in Madikwe and we found a dead elephant and we saw, and it sounds so anthropomorphic, we saw a herd come and mourn it. But I've just come back now from Chobe, the last bit of my trip. Not Chobe, Zambia. And Rotunda again. And our guide told us many, many times he'd seen an elephant, if it had died naturally of old age. Other elephants will bring sticks, will bring branches and lay them round the elephant. I don't think maybe they're trying to give it food. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. But it's touching and poignant, whatever they reason.
You're very objective about a lot of the things that people tend to be very subjective about, their own spiritual practices, religions, all of this stuff.
I can feel a low ball coming here.
No. Have you ever met anyone and thought that person has special powers or something?
No.
That they were all just flesh and bones.
I think the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, I'm not into auras, but there was something about them, almost an aura of an emanation of goodness. There was something about them that was special. But I once said to Terry Waite, because I have never met an evil person that I'm aware of. Terry Waite was the Archbishop of Canterbury's envoy who used to go and negotiate hostages in the 90s, and they took him. I forget whether it was the Taliban, but some terrorist organisation took him. Came into the studio. He's 6'8" and he wears size 13 shoes.
Wow.
He was chained to an radiator in solitary confinement for 4.5 years.
My God.
He kept himself sane. It's a bit like Steve McGowan.
Steve McGowan.
I'm sure you've talked to Steve McGowan. But he kept himself sane by reading all the books he'd ever read, by playing the music in his head. And he was a very ardent Christian, and his faith kept him going. So my feeling is whatever keeps people going, that's fine, as long as, I think I said to you, they're not praying, P-R-E-Y, on vulnerable.
But wasn't your point that he said he had witnessed evil?
Oh, yes, sorry. He said, Terry Waite told me he'd witnessed evil, but he wouldn't expound. He died recently, lived to be well into his 80s. No, he wouldn't expound. People tell me evil exists and they've seen evil, and I'm sure it does. I've been fortunate enough to have been too daft to notice it, maybe.
Well, or lucky.
Or lucky. No,
just
or
lucky, both. Because who wants to? If it's
both.
As horrible as Terry Waite says it was, that he wouldn't even talk about it, then it must be really terrible. Are there places that you couldn't go to because of wars and not being able to get visas or passports? And, you know, there are some parts of the world that, for example, I'd love to go to Mesopotamia and see the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, the old site of Babylon and Nineveh and all of those places.
You've been to Central Europe. What is Serbia, Central Europe? Mm-hmm. Does that count?
Yeah, I've been to Serbia.
But not during the war? Or?
No, after the war. Well, it's a fascinating place. I mean, they've got this very dark past. But they don't... I think maybe a little bit like South Africa. When tourists come here, we don't really dwell on apartheid. And we, I think, I mean, okay, we do Well, we do have the Pate Museum, which I think is brilliant.
It's fantastic.
But they, you know, you have to dig quite hard to ask them about their past. They
like Croatia.
Yeah, they want to look forward. They want to forget. Mm. Or maybe not forget, but they don't want to focus on that. Yeah, to dwell on the past. So it's a beautiful country. It's one of the few countries that's actually affordable for South Africans. Amazing food.
Well, lots of people go to Croatia and Montenegro.
Croatia. I wasn't very keen on. Tiffany and I went. It was lovely.
The inland of Croatia is beautiful.
Yeah.
Dubrovnik's, yeah, I mean, great, but it's a massive tourist. Massive tourist.
And I mean, it's like people lock in the middle of Dubrovnik. You can't move, can't go forward.
And
backward.
Super yacht lock as well on the coast of Dubrovnik.
Huh.
Yeah.
But no places that you were denied entry to?
Nearly. We were in. I don't think either of you were with me. We were in Mexico and or Guatemala, I can't remember. And there was quite a biggish village had gone on strike and they had blocked all the traffic, the main road coming in and out of the village. And I had a friend with me who'd studied at the same time as me in London, and he spoke perfect Spanish. And he taught us all solidaridad, which means solidarity. So we went up to the miners. We went up.
Massive protest.
And we toy-toed with them, and we all shouted, solidaridad, and they let us through.
But I'll tell you another story about, you know, my mum always goes to places, often goes to places that no one else goes to on holiday. You know, because like, so I've been a couple of times there to India.
Oh, I love
India. And we don't go to, you know, like the Golden Temple, which it's a Sikh temple that.
Amritsar.
And Amritsar, and it's only for men, male Indians.
Yeah.
Okay, but so all these white women go off to see the Golden Temple, which we did. We did see. And then like we went to a kingdom in northern India called Sikkim. I mean, nobody has even heard of Sikkim. But anyway, we went there on holiday. There's a big sign that said, no Nigerians.
On the border.
And we went into Sikkim.
Wow.
But the story I want to tell is about going to Kashmir, which we've been to twice.
Yes, wonderful. Kashmir can't
is
go now.
Absolutely beautiful. That's a place you can't go anymore at the moment. It's surrounded by the Himalayas, white tips, beautiful mountains. And then they've got this lake in Srinagar called Lake Dal, which is it's so clear. It's just, you see all the reflections
in the Crown, houseboats in Srinagar.
Anyway, but there was a minor war going on there at the time. And my mum was, we have to go to Kashmir because she's, you know, wants to read Jewel in the Crown, etc. We've got to go there. So, and she's got this faithful band of followers who are almost as reprobates. I mean, they all drink and swear and behave badly. Anyway, they don't really question the, you know, she says she's wise, but this is questionable at times. So I said to her, Mum, do you think it's safe to go to Kashmir? Of course it's safe. You're such a worrywart, but whatever. Of course it's safe. So off we go. Now we're in Srinagar. It's the first afternoon. And we're visiting some hanging gardens. Now, wherever we went in Kashmir, we were the only tourists because
no one else was.
Goes there, right? So we're in these gardens, and there's this massive plume of smoke coming from the city centre, and we all sort of looked at it with minor, interest, and then on our itinerary, it said we're going to the tourist centre in town next, and the guy said, "Oh no, we're going to change. We're going somewhere else." So we didn't think too much of it. Then I was reading the newspaper on the way home on the plane, and the tourist centre in Srinagar had been bombed minutes before we were meant to go there.
But to add to that, it was the first time they were running a bus service between India and Pakistan, because Kashmir is part of India, which some people don't agree
with. No, it's divided. They're partitioned. Some is in Kashmir. Some is in
Tara, you were working for Randall, no.
No.
Anyway, she's a journalist. She said, we've got to see this bus.
I did want to see the bus.
we've got to see this bus. So what could we do? Nobody would take us to the bus. So in good South African fashion, we hijacked. We hijacked a bus and made them follow this bus all the way. Oh, to the Pakistani Indian border, which you cannot believe they do the changing of the guard. And this is...
But that's in Amritsar, not Kashmir.
Yes. No.
Yeah, Amritsar. That's where we saw the changing of the guard. But carry on, because it's a good story.
Well, the changing of the guard, when you're between Pakistan and India, it's like worse than the War of the Roses or anything else. It's each country trying to outdo the others.
Oh, really?
And the Pakistanis and their black peacock feathers and their black uniforms and marching, and then the Indians are in there, each other, and they're eyeballing one another. It's like something like out of Game of Thrones, actually, wasn't it? Absolutely amazing.
Would you want to go to North Korea? Talking about the borders.
I would.
No, you wouldn't. Nothing to see there.
I'm not interested. You would.
I would want to go, yeah. Sure.
And you know, I don't want to go into space. Do you want to go into space?
Oh, yeah, I definitely want to go to space. No.
Well, I mean, she does not shy away from danger. I've been on at least two live volcanoes that have exploded within a couple of weeks of us being there. She always says that one day when she does slip off this mortal coil, it's going to be something very dramatic in somewhere completely...
tip into a volcano by mistake. Yes.
somewhere completely inaccessible and make a go of it. But she's never shied away from danger.
Wow.
But I've never considered danger. It doesn't occur to me some things dangerous. Alan used to say, my late husband used to say, I have no imagination because I'm not frightened of anything, which is quite a scary thought.
So what do the grandchildren think of their granny? Do they think all grannies are like this? Because they're not.
I had these amazing letters and feedback.
I think they think all grannies are like this. I think when people mention their granny at school, they, you know, they have a picture of what's in their mind.
Kate's pulling a face.
They also know when to roll their eyes at granny being granny.
Right.
But yeah, they're lucky. But you can never tell a young person how lucky they are to have a grandmother like that.
Charles Sam wrote to me, he's 12, yesterday. He said, you know you've got a famous granny when your class teacher knows. And Tiffany Sells' daughter just had an upper sinus up. And all she remembers just before they put her up was the surgeon saying, this is Kate Jerkington's granddaughter.
You are going to have a party every year.
Yes.
Until you get to 100.
Unless I'm too...
No, she doesn't stop at 100. It's just a big one.
Oh, right. So we're building up to a big one at 100.
But I can assure you the 101 will 101 be even will more be spectacular.
Got to get my telegram from the king. Can I tell Gareth the last story?
Yes.
Alan and I, my husband had business in Botswana. And Prince Charles, as he was then, was coming to Botswana to open a dam. And all the press had to stand at one end of the dam, and that was it. So Alan, being Alan, said, there's no way we're standing at the end of the dam. So we walked across to the other side. So Prince Charles arrives, immediately walks across to the end of the dam. And Alan was wearing his regimental tie. He'd been in the British Army. So he and Charles got chatting a bit, and we chatted a bit, and then he walked back across, and we thought that was it. 2 days later, we were in the line at the Royal Garden Party in Habarone. You know how you stand in line. And Charles comes along, he stands in front of us. He said, not the Turkingtons again. He said, how could you not be a royalist?
That's fantastic.
How could you not be a royalist?
Well, he better bloody well get that letter ready for your 100th. It's so special to spend time with all three of you. And I think that, you know, South Africa is a tough and interesting place. And there are lots of people who are worried about politics and the economy and all these things we can't control. But what's so lovely is to see three women who are friends and family and who have so much to give the world, and the three of you do, and it's you're the font of all of this.
And we love South Africa. And my eldest grandson, top of nine, who's 34, said to me recently, "I'll never leave South Africa, Granny.
No, I mean,
I'll never leave.
You know, you've never been tempted, of course, with all the travel.
Anywhere else?
Absolutely, you've been everywhere. So
yes,
you really are a good resource. And you, Tara?
I have. No, this is by far my favorite. Mm. By far. How could you not? South Africa's the best country in the world. Hands down.
I could do a month in Bora Bora.
I quoted you the other night. I have a friend who said, we all know they try saying the grass is green on the other side of the fence. She says the grass is only as green as you make it.
And usually there's quite a lot of fertilizer or manure involved.
my younger son Rex, when he was very young and he thought that people laid eggs because he kind of got the story wrong about eggs and fertilization. Was very young and in the back of the car one day, I think he was four. He says, "You know what, Mom? None of us would be here if Granny hadn't laid us."
Well, mother hen. Well, you're so unconventional. I wouldn't be surprised if you laid eggs, actually. witchcraft.
There's witchcraft. Witchcraft.
There was a supermoon for your birthday party. The
yes,
night.
Of course. Oh.
You're communing with the,
of course.
With the spirits.
Of course. No, don't do spirits.
Listen, we love you.
Thank you.
And thank you for
we
coming
love
to
you.
Talk to us. And this has been a long time coming. And thank you both, Tiffany and Tara, for coming.
Thank you, and we love
because,
you.
Because, yeah, exactly. It's very special to have all three of you here. And
so, 1, 2, 3. Again, 1, 2, 3.
All right. What did you call it? A cheesy Facebook moment?
Yes.
No more of that. Yes. This is a good place to stop. Thank you all.
Thank you. Pleasure. Cliffcentral.com.